Well, we're going to think today about power. That's the subject, real power, the power of Jesus. Over the past couple of weeks, I've noticed two displays of power. The first was on Netflix. I'm watching a documentary called Starting Five. It's all about some NBA basketballers, five top NBA basketballers. And as I've watched my way through the documentary, I am just amazed at their power. They are so powerful, these guys. They sprint down the court in about five bounds. They blast through the defense. They jump into the air as if gravity doesn't exist. They slam the ball so hard through the hoop that you think you're going to rip the net off it. And they land, and then they posture. And they're saying to the crowd, look at me. I am a man of power. I am the most powerful. It's very clear to see that that's the message that they want the crowd and the audience and the cameras to take on board. They are displaying their power. The other display of power, which I noticed and which has stuck with me, is one that I'm sure many of you may have noticed, and that was when Zelensky went to the White House to be interviewed by Trump. And whatever you think of Trump and his personality or his policies, I don't think anyone could fail to notice that he wanted the world to know that he is the most powerful. That was his message. I am the most powerful. I am displaying my power for all to see. What a contrast to the power that we see in Mark chapter 5 in the passage that Tom read out, verses 21 to 43. What a contrast to Jesus' power. Jesus' power is jaw-dropping. It's mind-boggling power. But it's not paraded around. It's not bragged about. He doesn't posture and display to everyone and look at me now. Look how powerful I am. It's quietly given. It's passionately offered, compassionately offered to those in need. So let's get into the passage to find out more about this incredible power that Jesus displays. Mark introduces us to Jairus, first of all. There's these two main characters, isn't there? Jairus and the woman. Jairus is the first that we come across in verses 22 to 23. I mean, it's just so tragic, isn't it? His daughter is dying. And he comes and approaches Jesus and just throws himself at Jesus' feet and earnestly begs him, come and heal my daughter. And Jesus does. But then he's interrupted by the woman. No sooner does he start on his way to Jairus' house than there's this encounter with this woman who'd been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She touches Jesus and she's healed. And Mark deliberately interweaves these two stories together because he wants us to notice the differences and the similarities between Jairus and the woman. He does a sort of compare and contrast. So we're going to do that now. Let's first of all notice, and you can see these two charts on the screen. Let's notice how very different Jairus and the woman are. The obvious one is that Jairus is named, but the woman is anonymous. She's just a kind of shadow in the crowd, hidden. Jairus has this strong faith. He comes to Jesus. He asks that Jesus would heal his daughter. But the woman has a weak faith. She's very fearful. She's very timid in the way she approaches Jesus. Jairus is male, the woman's female, and that would have, you know, put Jairus at a tremendous advantage in that society at that time. Men were given much more of a priority than women were. She maybe thought, well, will he give me the time of day? How can I even approach this man? Whereas Jairus as a man would have no problem. No thoughts like that at all would enter his head. Jairus is undoubtedly wealthy. He was the leader of the synagogue. And he would have been very comfortable in his life. But she was poor. We're told that. She spent all she had trying to find a cure. Jairus had status. He was a leader in the local community. A leader of the synagogue. He was at the top of his game. He had the status, but she had none at all. He was socially prominent because of his status, but she was an outcast. She was someone who lived on the periphery, someone who Nobody would have known. If they did know, they wouldn't really want to know her, if you see what I mean. That kind of person. Very, very different to one another in that way. Jairus was ceremonially clean, but she would have been ceremonially unclean. Just a word of explanation on that. According to Leviticus chapter 15, verses 19 through 31, those verses say that a woman on her period is unclean. Now, we're not told for sure, but commentators agree that the most likely condition that the woman had was some kind of gynecological condition, which meant that she would experience bleeding and heavy bleeding on the days outside of her period. Now, the word unclean in Leviticus 15 is not a statement about hygiene, and it's not a statement about being sinful, but it's more about what the body symbolically represents before God. If the womb symbolizes a sacred space, a space which nurtures life, which produces life, then during the period, it becomes a place where it can't produce life. So at that point, the womb symbolizes a moving away from life, therefore a moving away from God, the source of all life. Hence the designation of unclean. But this poor woman, she wasn't just unclean on those days of her period. She had this continual bleeding condition. And that meant she would have had to be kept separate from other people. She was isolated, alone, ceremonially unclean. So awful for her, so difficult for her to bear that condition for 12 years. Let's move on with our comparison. Jairus, of course, came openly, approached Jesus front on, but she crept up from behind, came furtively, secretly. Jairus' daughter had only 12 short years of life. The woman, she had 12 long years of suffering. Jairus' daughter was unable to continue life. The woman's womb was unable to conceive life. So you see how different they were, Jairus and the woman. But the thing that both of them experienced and the thing that brought them to Jesus and brings them together in this story that Mark draws our attention to is that they both realized, they said to themselves, Jesus, his power, that's the only way my greatest need will ever be met. That's why they come to Jesus. That's why both of them converge on Jesus. It was their need that brought them there. They knew that nothing else could help them. Jesus' power was their only hope. That's what united them. That's the similarity. And that's what Mark is bringing to our attention. They desperately need Jesus. No other options. Completely out of options. No one has the power to give them the help they need. So let's look at the woman first of all. She comes to Jesus because she has this great need. She needs to be healed. Now, as I've said, we don't know her exact condition, but as we've seen, it's most likely that she was suffering some kind of chronic gynecological bleeding or hemorrhaging, and that would have caused her pain and exhaustion and embarrassment and probably shame as well. And she tried everything. She'd spent everything. She'd been to every doctor that she could find. She'd probably endured lots of weird and wonderful and damaging remedies and cures, and none of them had worked. In fact, made everything worse. So she comes here to Jesus. Her desperation, her need, has brought her to him. And as we've also seen, but I think what Mark wants us to notice, her approach. She comes timidly. She tiptoes almost, as it were, up behind him. She doesn't want to be noticed. She wishes she had an invisibility cloak like in Lord of the Rings, but she doesn't. She thinks, if I can just touch him. She's probably terrified, actually. She's probably terrified that this famous young rabbi will, if he notices her, reject her and ridicule her and expose her. So she approaches secretly and reaches out and touches just his clothes. And verse 29 says, immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. What a moment that must have been for her. To feel it, to know it. I'm free. I'm healed. It's finished. Jesus' power has delivered me. But what about Jesus' response? Well, he responds with power and compassion. When she touches him, the power just flows out of him. He's that powerful. Just a touch heals a woman who's been suffering for 12 years. A woman that no one else can help. He brings her utter liberation. His power here is amazing. And his compassion is amazing too. I think when I was studying this, I was really struck by the fact that he's not content just to heal her. I mean, that was amazing enough, wasn't it? That was just wonderful. But he stops because he feels the power going out of him, and he calls her out of the crowd. He brings her into public view so everyone notices her, because he wants to commend her faith. He wants to restore her dignity. He wants to publicly demonstrate his acceptance of her so that she could take her place in society again. So he calls her out. He has such compassion on her. He knows the stigma she would have been carrying and suffering under. And notice also in verse 34, he calls her daughter. He's giving her this father-like, loving, authoritative care. He's assuring her, he's saying, I will not recriminate you or humiliate you. I'm your loving father, you're my daughter. I care for you like that. And then he tells her to go in peace. The Greek word for peace here aligns with the Hebrew word for peace, shalom. And that peace, it was more for her than just a release from mental and physical stress and pain and so on. It was this profound experience of wholeness and well-being, which in a Bible context is related to salvation from God and knowing God and being right with God. He gave her that kind of peace. Her body, her womb was healed, yes, but she had this whole mind, soul, spirit and body experience of God's peace in her. He has rescued her and he's restored her from what she was. And we praise him, don't we, for his power and for his compassion. But what about us? What about you and me? How does this woman's experiencing Jesus' power, how does that relate to us? Well, I want to say this to you this morning. Are you, in your life right now, hemorrhaging joy and satisfaction and fulfillment and peace? Have you been trying, like the woman, everything? Maybe you've been trying all sorts just to find peace, just to find purpose, to find fulfillment in your life. Maybe you've literally spent loads of money buying things, going places, experiencing things, just to fill the hole in your soul, just to try and get rid of the emptiness that you feel inside. Is that your condition right now? Do you long to be healed of this condition? Do you think, I feel like I've tried everything, I just cannot find what I'm searching for? You know, this woman represents us, represents the condition of humanity. We have this tendency as humans, we try to get healed from the hole in our soul and the emptiness in our lives. We try to work it out ourselves. And to buy healing, especially in our consumeristic society. We try ourselves to find peace, but we often fail. We spend our resources trying things, which, if we're honest, don't work. Or they work for a while. We buy a new gadget or a new thing, and its shininess fulfills us for a while, and then it kind of wears off, and we're back to where we started. In our culture, powerful advertising offers us powerful products that can make us happy and fulfilled, but they often actually leave us in a worse state than before. Perhaps they leave us like the woman in debt, because we're spending, trying to get happy. If that's you this morning, if you're at that point in your life, in that place, then come to Jesus like the woman did. Touch him by faith. Don't be afraid that he'll ignore you or that people will mock you. Don't be afraid of all that. Come to him because he can give you that satisfaction that you're craving. Yeah, other things can to an extent, but they can't fulfill you deeply like he can and his love can. Maybe you're here this morning because you sense that Jesus has power, a power that can help you in your struggle to feel shalom and peace and wholeness. Perhaps you've got some kind of faith in him. Perhaps it's a weak faith or a secretive faith or a timid faith, but you're sort of making your way towards him, pushing your way through the crowd like the woman did. I want to commend you and encourage you. If that's why you're here this morning, or if you're at that point in your life, your faith will make you well. Your faith will give you what you've been seeking. If you reach out and touch Jesus through faith, then you will find healing from emptiness and having no purpose. You will find peace. That peace we thought about, that wholeness and completeness, that profound experience of well-being that comes through a right relationship with God. You will find that. In fact, you'll find that no other place apart from Jesus. So come to him in faith, not tiptoeing up secretly behind him, but give your life fully and wholly and completely to him. And you will not only immediately find that you stop hemorrhaging life and satisfaction and joy, you will also find that you receive immediately eternal life. And the assurance that you'll be raised from the dead because of Jesus' great resurrection power. That's what will come to you when you reach out and touch Jesus by faith. I think that's the first thing that we learn from this woman. The second thing is this. Are you in your life at a point where you feel, I want to approach God, but I just don't feel the courage because of the shame I feel because of who I am, or the guilt I experience because of what I've done? If you're feeling like that, will God accept me? Maybe you're saying right now in your head to me, you don't know what I've done. You don't know what I'm like. How can God love me, such a person of me? If you're feeling like that, I want you to remember the woman approached Jesus like this, but he publicly acknowledges her. And lifts her, and not only heals her, but removes her shame so she could be at peace. And Jesus can do the same with you, and will do the same with you. Such is his power and compassion. He doesn't just accept prominent people and rich people and people with status like Jairus. He accepts the people on the periphery, in the shadows, the ones experiencing shame, thinking no one wants to know me. Jesus says, I do. I've got time for you. In my very busy, important life, I've got time for you. So come to him in faith, if you feel like that. Your faith in Jesus will save you from the punishment you deserve, will remove your guilt and your shame, and will give you life, life to the full. And then another thing that we learn from this passage. I wonder whether you are at a Mark 5 verse 33 moment in your life right now. That verse is where it says she was trembling with fear when Jesus brought her out into the open. Perhaps You are a Christian, right? You do have faith. But perhaps the thought of going public with your faith just makes you tremble with fear. Perhaps you plan to just creep away from here into your workplace tomorrow and keep your faith secret. If you're feeling like that, Jesus, like he did the woman, calls you out into the open, calls you to rejoice openly in his grace, not just in church, but outside of the walls of church too. He says to you, go in peace and be free from fear. He says to you, trust me. When you go public about your faith, my great power will help you. It's okay. So push forward into his power. Step out in faith and go into Monday with God's peace, knowing that he'll strengthen you if you share your faith with your colleagues or whoever else you're scared of. So that's what we learn from the woman in this passage. Let's move on now to Jairus. So his need was the same as the woman's. His daughter was dying. He needed Jesus to heal her. He needed that power from Jesus because nothing else could help. He had this realization, I have no other option. I've nowhere else to go in the face of death. He could only appeal to Jesus in his utter, complete helplessness. And his approach to Jesus was the opposite to the woman. He was bold, didn't come secretly, just came straight up to Jesus, fell at his feet, pleaded earnestly with him. And Jesus responds in the same way as he did the woman, with power and with compassion. He goes straight away to Jairus' house, to tend to Jairus' daughter. But then, of course, he's interrupted by the woman. Now, this must have been an awful moment for Jairus, a really awful moment, waiting while Jesus healed the woman and then thinking, well, you've healed her, can we go now? Why do you have to talk to her like this? I need to go, my daughter's dying. It must have been a terrible moment for him to bear. And so when the news came that his daughter had died, he must have felt like he would die that moment there from grief, hearing that news. But here we see Jesus' compassion. Because Jesus overhears the message to Jairus. You notice that in verse 36 or 35. And then he responds in verse 36. He says to Jairus, don't be afraid, just believe. He encourages Jairus. He knows what Jairus is going through and he has compassion on him. In the original Greek language that the New Testament was written in, the tense for just believe means keep on believing. Jesus is saying to Jairus, in effect, don't get swallowed up by fear now. You've started well. You've come to me in faith. Keep trusting me. I'm still here. I've got this. It's okay, Jairus. He's reassuring him. And after Jesus deals with the woman, he goes to the house of Jairus, and such is his great power. He says in verse 39, the child is not dead, but asleep. And what he means is, for me, raising this dead child is as easy as it is for you raising someone who's asleep. Just kind of waking someone up. Such is my power. That's how easy it is for me to raise somebody from the dead. And he takes her by the hand and he tells her to get up. And she does. And I think I read somewhere the literal translation is, rise up, little lamb. He's so compassionate on her. At that moment, he is displaying the greatest power in the world. The power that Paul describes in Ephesians as his incomparably great power, the power of mighty strength, more than the power of Caesar, more than the power of Trump or of Putin. He displays power not to bring death, but to bring life. It's the power that overpowers our greatest enemy. The power that marks Jesus out as not just human, but God too. Fully God and fully human. Because no one else can deliver power like that. This power that he demonstrates at that moment automatically raises him way above all the founders of all the other religions. Because he has power over death. Power to raise the dead. Power to defeat what every other human is defeated by. So how does this relate to us? This instance of Jesus' power in the case of Jairus' daughter. What does that have to do with you and me in the 21st century today? Well, Jesus raising the dead girl to life points to his own resurrection. We're coming up to Easter, and that's where we celebrate, isn't it? Jesus died but came to life. And this instance with the girl is pointing towards that. The resurrection makes Christianity utterly unique amongst the world religions. And why is the resurrection significant for you and me? Because it tells us that Jesus has the power to raise us from the dead one day. And that power is accessed by faith. Jesus died on the cross. He died to take the punishment we deserve for our sins so we could be forgiven. And then he rose from the dead. And he rose to prove that he is the powerful Son of God and to assure us that all who put their trust in him will also one day be raised like he was. If, like Jairus, you come to Jesus in faith, then one day he will take you by the hand like that little girl and say, "Arise, little lamb." And your perfected resurrection body will be rejoined to your perfected soul and you will live with all God's people on a renewed earth. That's what the story of Jairus' daughter, points to. That's the hope that Jesus offers. Hope based not on just wishful thinking, but on his power to raise the dead. Proved most greatly by him coming back after being crucified. So I want to ask you, will you approach Jesus by faith this morning if you haven't already done so? Death is our greatest enemy, isn't it? Greatest terror, greatest thing that haunts us. Jesus has power over it. You just have to come to him by faith. Say, "I trust in you, Jesus. I know you can raise me. I hold on to you by faith." Will you do that this morning? There's something else here too. I wonder, are you at a Jairus moment right now in your life? By Jairus moment, I mean that particular moment when Jesus is just about to go to Jairus' house, but he's interrupted by the woman. That moment, which must have been so hard for Jairus, that moment of delay, that he must have, I don't know how he could even cope with it psychologically. What are you doing, Jesus? The woman can wait. My daughter's dying. Perhaps you're here today and you have faith, you are a Christian, so you've already trusted in Jesus, but perhaps God has done something in your life which is very hard. And like Jairus, you're thinking, "What are you doing, God? Why are you doing this?" And you're struggling with it. Jesus says to you this morning, "Don't be afraid," as he said to Jairus. "Keep believing in me. I am still steering the ship of your life. I am still directing circumstances according to my plan. Trust me. Trust in my great power." You see, sometimes when difficult circumstances come into our lives, our internal doubts, or maybe Satan, or maybe others, especially perhaps non-Christians, they speak to us the way that those people spoke to Jairus. They came from his house, verse 35. You know, the ones who said, "Don't bother Jesus, she's already dead." Those voices can come into our mind, and we're going through suffering, and they can kind of say, "It's not worth bothering with Jesus anymore. He didn't give you what you wanted and prayed for. He doesn't really care about you. just give up following him. What's the point? Are you at that point right now in your life? Jesus says to you, as he did Jairus, don't be afraid. Just believe. You see, if Jesus remains with us, there's no grounds for fear. We need to trust the person, not the circumstances. That's what Jairus had to do. Circumstances were awful. But Jesus said, just keep fixed on me. I've got this. Jesus has his hand of grace on your life right now. It might not feel like it. It didn't to Jairus, did it? But he has. You can trust his compassionate power. Things might not work out like you expect they will work out, but he is working in you to work things out. Don't be afraid. Keep trusting as you go through this difficult moment in your life right now. You can trust him because of his compassionate power. And I think this story, the third thing we notice, it's very poignant, I think, is it just contains an encouragement for parents. Parents maybe whose children are not following Jesus, who are spiritually dead. They have, maybe your child has no interest whatsoever in God, in Jesus, in church, in Christianity. They have this spiritual deadness in their life and you're afraid for them. Look with faith to Jesus, to his power. Fall down on your knees in front of him like Jairus did and pray. And keep praying and keep having faith. Because even though, like Jairus, things may happen which seem to impede Jesus working in the life of your son or your daughter, he will work. He is working. Trust him. Search the Bible. Pray it back to him. Search yourself. Ask God what to do. Don't give up. Trust in his compassionate power. Get other people. Share with them your fear. Get them to pray for you. Keep trusting in the darkness. I want to finish just by saying this. I want to point out the significance of the two 12s in the passage. Perhaps you noticed them, those two 12s, the woman's 12 long years of suffering and the girl's 12 short years of life. Mark is telling us something through these two 12s. Why is the number 12 significant in the Bible? Well, think about the Old Testament, the 12 tribes of Israel, right? God's people, his treasured possession, as he describes them quite frequently in the Old Testament. New Testament, why is 12 significant? The 12 apostles, the foundation of God's church. Again, his beloved people. Fast forward to Revelation chapter 21, where the new Jerusalem, the bride of the Lamb, God's church is described. We see this. It had a great high wall with 12 gates. On the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. The wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. The two 12s in Mark point to these two 12s in Revelation 21. They point to the destiny of God's people, of all who have put genuine faith in Jesus. Earlier on in Revelation chapter 21, it says in verses 3 and 4, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.'" Notice, no more pain like the woman would have had. No more death like Jairus' daughter experienced. If we're trusting Jesus, this is our destination. This is where his power will bring us. This is what we are spending Lent preparing ourselves for, isn't it? To celebrate. This is resurrection hope and where it leads. This is real power like nothing else. Power far greater, surpassing anything that we can imagine or see or observe in our planet Earth, with a more wonderful destiny than anything else. Praise God for his plan. Praise Jesus for his power. Praise the Spirit for revealing all of this to us and drawing him to God, drawing us to God himself. Amen.